The House will come to order. The flag salute will be led by Representative Call.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by First Light Band of the Portland metropolitan area, and they are guests of Representative Gilliam.
Thank you.
courtesies, Representative Gilliam. Maybe not quite yet. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'm happy to have two honorary pages from Ashland here today, Josh and Alex Harris. Would you guys please stand up? Josh and Alex Harris both attend Ashland High School. Josh is a sophomore and is the school table tennis champion and belongs to the National Honor Society. His career goal is to get a PhD in French. His brother Alex is 17. He's a junior at Ashland High. Is also on the National Honor Society, is a member of the champion Ashland High School water polo team, and a member of the Ashland High debate team as well. Welcome both you guys. Thanks for being here today. Hope you have a great day at the Capitol. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm very proud today to introduce my honorary page, Kenny Freeman. Please stand up. Kenny's my son, and he's a seventh grader at Joe Lane Middle School in Roseburg. His activities are cross country, track, and wrestling, and also he did a fantastic job this summer organizing and keeping track of me doing door-to-door, and I thank him very much for that. His career goal is to be an Oregon State Trooper, so members, please welcome Kenny.
Thank you, and welcome to your house. Representative Escoval.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to introduce you to an honorary page from Medford. He is Marcus Brown. Would you stand up, please, Marcus? Marcus is a student at South Medford High School. He's a 10th grader. His activities and interests include band, and his career goals may be determined on what he sees here today. Welcome to the House.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My apologies. If you snooze, you lose when you have the gavel, apparently. Madam Speaker, it's my pleasure to welcome First Light. We've already enjoyed their music. And I asked First Light a little bit about why they're together and what they do, and here's what they said. First Light has a ministry to help the homeless and reach out to help the Portland Rescue Mission. Every third Sunday of the month, this group goes down to the mission, and they give a musical worship service. They go and play their music at churches around the Portland area, all in an effort to bring an awareness of the mission's needs for clothing, money, and people to volunteer and serve. So please welcome, and here they are, and they'll wave to you. Bob, Vern, Brian, Bruce, and Mark. We're glad you guys are here, and thank you very much for sharing. I would also add, Madam Speaker, that this group came to my attention by way of somebody that I think you all know, and that her name is Sandy Sumner. Many of you know that I succeeded your former colleague, Max Sumner. And Sandy, his widow from Malala, is here with us today, too. So, Sandy, say hello. Thank you. Lastly, Madam Speaker, and I know you may grow weary, but we have a lot of guests today. And I have a very special Girl Scout troop up in the upper deck there. Would you please welcome Girl Scout Troop 1093 from Malala and Canby. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you, and welcome to your house. And again, thank you to the First Light Band. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Right behind me at the bar is Mr. Greg Taylor, a professor at Klamath Community College and a member of the Klamath County Republican Party. So we would like to welcome him.
Welcome. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's good to see your smiling face up there this morning. I have two honorary pages today. First honorary page, Ryan, would you like to stand up, please? Ryan Topping from Judson Middle School. And he is in advanced math, a couple of grades ahead of where he really is, so we want to honor him for that. He's in choir and band. And he wants to be a scientist. When I asked him what type of scientist, he said forensic scientist. You might want to visit our Judiciary Committee this afternoon and see what kind of bills we look at there that have to do with crime and crime labs. Welcome. Our second honorary page is Caleb Forshear. And Caleb is a 10th grader, sophomore at Cascade High School, and I like to remind everybody, my wife's alma mater, class of 76. Caleb is a real busy guy. He's in student council, public relations. He's in the FAA, agricultural programs, government and politics, and he's on the honor roll. His career goals, he would like to support agriculture. We have a lot of opportunities for that. And the other career goal is possibly politics, and he's already done an investigation on me and knows my background. He knew my wife and where she went to school already, too. So good job, and we'll look forward to seeing your career.
Welcome to your state capitol. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to say on the onset, I'm happy to see all these young people in the Capitol today because it's spring vacation. I think this is a wonderful way for kids to come visit us. I have three honorary pages to introduce today. J.D. Friel. J.D. Is from Eagle Point. He goes to St. Mary's. He's in the 10th grade and he's 16 years old. He likes basketball, art, and snowboarding, and he wants to be an artist or a teacher when he grows up. Thanks, J.D. Cody Friel. Cody is from Eagle Point, goes to St. Mary's. He's in the 9th grade, and he's 14. He likes to play football, basketball, track, and snowboarding, and he's undecided in what he wants to do. That's quite fair, I think. Lauren Nesberg, age 16, 9th grade, from Eagle Point, and goes to Eagle Point. Basketball, football, and baseball are his activities, and he wants to be a doctor when he grows up. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today in the gallery is my family. My mom, Tony, my father, Sam, my brother, Alex, my sister-in-law, Cheryl, and my niece, Samantha. I love you, Stinky. Everybody, please send them your courtesies.
Welcome. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, please help me welcome to the House two honorary pages from the Robert Gray Middle School, Holly Carlson Riddle and Sierra Killian. These young women are both in the 7th grade at Robert Gray and share some musical interests. They are both in the choir, and Sierra also plays violin in the orchestra and does community service, while Holly does ballet and jazz, as well as enjoying Spanish. We are delighted to have you here. Please enjoy your day.
Welcome to your Capitol. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to introduce Spencer Helms, age 10, 5th grade, from Happy Valley. He attends the Happy Valley Elementary, where my daughter went to school as well. His activities and interests include football, competitive gymnast, and volunteering. And his career goals are create an organization that protects animals if the NFL doesn't pan out. So good luck with that.
Welcome. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and colleagues. I'd like to introduce one of my three favorite constituents today, my son, Simon Edwards. It is spring break, as many of you know, and mom's been at home with a new baby, and I figured could use a little bit of a break, and what better day to give her a break than on the day that our governor signed the executive order creating the Oregon Autism Commission. So Simon's up here to celebrate that with me as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hannah.
I know. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. I have the pleasure this morning of introducing an intern from our office, David Collada, and he is over here with his family. David has been working in our office since the very beginning of session. He is a junior at George Fox University and is studying political science and economics. In addition to the work he does in our office on this side of the building, David also interns for Senator Starr at the other end of the building. He has proven himself to be invaluable in both roles, and we thank him for that. Joining David today in the Capitol for the visit is his father, Camille, who is a pastor of an Arab immigrant church, his mother, Rachel, who has homeschooled all six of the children, and three of his siblings, Samuel and Benjamin, who both attend Clackamas Community College, and Esther, who is homeschooled and also attending New Covenant Christian Academy. Colleagues, please welcome the Collada family to the Capitol today.
Welcome to your Capitol. Representative Brune.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today is Diabetes Day at the Capitol, and I'd like you to extend courtesies and welcome to advocates for diabetes education. I know there's some wearing red up in the balcony right now. A lot of you have meetings set up with these good folks. They're going to be around the Capitol all day long, as well as a display set up on the first floor to educate us all about diabetes. Real quickly, there's about 275,000 Oregonians that have been diagnosed with either one of two types of diabetes, not to mention four or five members of our own caucus here. So when you see these folks today or get a chance to go downstairs, say hi. Also like to acknowledge Greg Anderson and Sally Norby. I don't know if they're up there right now, but they're two of my old colleagues, and they're both members of the Oregon chapter, board members of the Oregon chapter of the American Diabetes Association. Thank you.
Welcome. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I have a constituent from Tillamook today, John Cummings, and I work with him on an Oregon Solutions flood mitigation project in Tillamook, and I'd like you to help me welcome him to the Capitol today. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome. Are there further courtesies? Representative Freeman, did you have a courtesy? Are there any further courtesies? Okay. Next, we have our moment in history. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Music in our school month, the Sagebrush Symphony. The sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Encyclopedia, a statewide project supported by Portland State University, the Oregon Historical Society, the Oregon Council of Teachers of English, with generous support from the Oregon Cultural Trust. This history minute is written by Kathy Tucker. The Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra of Harney County was a bright spot of musical education for rural children in southeastern Oregon in the years before World War I. Talented music teacher and violinist Mary B. Dodge moved to Burns around 1910 and soon began playing music for local children in a tent at her husband's engineering camp. With funding from rancher Bill Hanley, lawyer and artist C.E.S. Wood, and Burns businessmen, Dodge purchased instruments for the children and organized them into an orchestra of 30 to 35 members. The children, who took turns conducting, played their first concert in Burns in 1912. By 1915, the orchestra was touring eastern Oregon on a Chautauqua circuit, and in September 1916, they traveled to the west side of the state. The Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra won $100 at the State Fair in Salem and played several concerts in Portland, including one for the famous opera star, Madame Ernestine Schumann-Heink, at the Portland Hotel. Madame Schumann-Heink was reportedly impressed and planned to help the orchestra continue touring. Unfortunately, America's involvement in World War I interrupted plans for further tours, and the Children's Orchestra disbanded when Dodge moved to Portland in 1918. Dodge went on to lead the Irvington School Orchestra, the founding group of the Portland Junior Symphony.
Thank you, Representative Jensen, for that moment in history. Verification of a quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Gilliam is present. All members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Madam Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 41, 239, 277, 391, 438, 596, House Bills 2061, 2336, adopted SJM 11. Madam Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed SCR 3, SJM 5, Senate Bills 86, 96, 130, 131, 139, 162, 165, 237, 268, 286, 288, 370, 403, House Bills 2250, 2251, and HJR 10.
First readings and memorials and resolutions.
SJM 11, urging Congress to fund cleanup efforts at Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Measure read first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2595 relating to persons employed to provide certain health care services. House Bill 2660 relating to the Workers' Memorial Scholarship Account.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2168 related to 911 communications removes outdated, unnecessary, or incorrect language, conforms language to form and style requirements.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2168A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Probably right in here.
Okay. Yeah, wherever you want to. So right when it gets.
Okay. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Bruhn votes aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Representative Van Orman. How do you vote? Representative Van Orman votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Representative Huffman votes aye. House Bill 2168A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2169, related to sex offender reporting.
Should I go? Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2169A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 2169A comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee, where it was unanimously supported as minimal fiscal. The current statutes for sex offender registration basically says the agency or official to whom a person reports shall complete a sex offender registration from the concerning person. From a common sense point of view, one might assume the related statutes would require the offender to provide information such that the agency could fill out the proper forms. And I just got to tell you from personal experience, having been in a patrol office years ago, you would have offenders come in on an annual basis to be registered. And at that point, be truthful, I did not know that they were not required by law to have to sign the form or have a photograph. So what this bill does, and it gets us closer to the Walsh Act, is actually requires them by law to have to fill in unattended gaps that we have currently. And House Bill 2169 adds clarifying language as to who is responsible for providing the information that goes on to the sex offender registration form, to the fact that the person required to report shall provide the information necessary to complete the sex offender registration form and sign the form as required. I would urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Representative Olson votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2169A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Cannon, for what purpose do you rise?
I rise to request a return to the order of courtesies, please.
Representative Cannon, request consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, we've been joined by a group of students and their teachers from my district, House District 46. They are from Grace Lutheran Church and 21 third and fourth graders, along with their leader, Joanne Corpse. Thank you very much for visiting your Oregon State Capitol, and welcome.
Welcome. While we're in the order of courtesies, are there any other courtesies? The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2246, relating to consumption of alcoholic liquor by underage persons.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2246A. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Ms. Speaker. House Bill 2246 comes to the floor with a unanimous vote from the Judiciary Committee. Clarifies that a minor can be provided alcohol by a parent or guardian only if they are accompanying the underage person and they are in a private residence. Also clarifies that it does not apply to sacramental wine provided as part of a religious rite or service. It's a good bill. Urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kinnamer, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2246A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2426, relating to penalties for driving while under the influence of intoxicants.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2426A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 2426 comes to you from your Committee on the Judiciary, where it passed unanimously. This bill imposes a minimum fine of $2,500 when someone is convicted of driving under the influence with a blood alcohol content of 0.15, nearly twice the legal limit. This 0.15 blood alcohol content standard is important because it also meets a requirement for a federal grant for impaired driving programs from the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. Colleagues, House Bill 2426 has no fiscal or revenue impact and deserves your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2426A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2441, related to confessions.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2441A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2441A comes to you from the House Committee on the Judiciary. I am pleased to inform you that it has a minimal fiscal impact. And I'm very happy to have it on the floor today. And after I tell you about it, I hope that you will join me in sending it. House Bill 2441A creates an important new protection for the most vulnerable Oregonians. People with developmental disabilities in Oregon and in the United States are at a heightened risk of sexual abuse. Eight out of every 10 adult women with a developmental disability will be raped or sexually abused in their lifetimes. Eight out of 10. Of that 8 out of 10, half of them will be sexually abused 10 times or more, often by the people that are either paid to care for them or family members who are responsible to care for them. These are individuals who do not always have the capacity to report these crimes, to take themselves for a rape kit exam, or to ask for help. Unfortunately, under current law, even if the assailant confesses to that crime, if that is the only evidence, that confession cannot be used in order to prosecute the individual. Now, you might think that this would never happen, but we actually have two recent cases here in Oregon that I want to tell you about. The first happened in my legislative district just a couple of years ago. And in this case, there was a guy who was working at a memory care facility. And a coworker came forward to accuse him of sexually assaulting her and a couple of other colleagues. During the investigation, while he was being interrogated on this issue, he confessed that in addition to sexually assaulting these individuals, he had raped three patients with Alzheimer's who were in his care on more than one occasion. This case went to trial. The individual was prosecuted and sentenced to 99 years without the possibility of parole. That conviction was appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court that upheld the convictions for the colleagues, but overturned the convictions for the assaults against the elderly women with Alzheimer's, because the only evidence that they had was the confession, and the women with Alzheimer's disease could not come and testify in court due to their dementia. Fast forward about 2 years to right here in Marion County. There was a sexting operation going on in regards to some child pornography. Investigators went out and interviewed an individual who had internet child porn on his computer, and in the midst of this interrogation, he confessed that while viewing the pornography, he was sexually abusing the toddler child of his girlfriend. This case also went to court. He was prosecuted and convicted. This case was also referred to the Oregon Supreme Court, and this conviction, too, was overturned because the toddler was not able to come and corroborate this confession. And in their ruling, the Supreme Court cited the Simons case, which was that case from my district, and sent a message to the legislature in stating that the corpus delicti rule, as demonstrated in Simons in this case, can make it more difficult to obtain convictions based on confessions of crimes against particularly vulnerable victims. The state's concerns about that result, as it has been construed in Lurch, are properly addressed by the legislature. So what we have here today in House Bill 2441A is the opportunity to address that concern. We had a very large work group in the interim that included prosecutors, the Department of Justice, defense attorneys, and the appellate attorney that worked on getting these convictions overturned. What we tried to do was strike the balance between the needs of these very vulnerable people and the rights of those who were accused, because none of us wants to see someone convicted of a crime that they did not commit. And that's one of the reasons why you need more evidence than just a confession to convict someone. We also learned during the course of this discussion that many states across the country have dealt with this in different ways. North Dakota has gotten rid of this rule altogether, and some states have created narrow, very narrow exceptions. What we propose here in House Bill 2441A would be the narrowest exception in the entire country. And what it would say is this. If an individual has confessed to a crime, and it must only be a sex crime, and the victim must be a vulnerable person, and a vulnerable person is a child, a person with limited mental capacity, like an elderly person who has dementia, or a person with a developmental disability, and the court has determined that that person is not able to testify at trial, and only if, in this case, the defendant is not themselves a person with mental retardation, a mental illness, or a juvenile, and the court, in a pretrial proceeding, determines that the confession itself is trustworthy because you can corroborate elements of the confession, in that case, the confession can be used to seek a conviction. We had a great hearing in the House Judiciary Committee. We heard from folks in the field who have seen how this has impacted vulnerable people. We also heard from a gentleman whose daughter had been a victim of a sexual assault, and the story that he heard from the prosecutor about how they could not proceed with a conviction because all they had was the confession of the person who had done this to her. Colleagues, we are talking about very, very vulnerable people who are victimized time and again. And the individuals who victimize these vulnerable people often offend time and again with the same victim or with others. And unfortunately, in these cases, there is rarely ever going to be any other evidence. Because if you have a person that is so vulnerable that they count on someone else to feed them, to bathe them, it's very unlikely that they are going to sexually assault them and then take them to the rape kit, to the hospital to get a rape kit before they feed them dinner and dress them for bed. Colleagues, this is a critical, critical bill that we can pass. It will help us protect very vulnerable Oregonians, and it will help hold accountable those people that would offend against such a vulnerable population. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in voting for this very good bill that has earned broad support. It is a very narrow exception that protects the rights of the defendant, but most importantly, it is going to finally make it possible in Oregon to seek convictions against those who prey on the most vulnerable and defenseless among us. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Klim, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2441A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Cameron, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Request to return to courtesies.
Representative Cameron requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today we have a group of bright students who are with us from around the state that are learning about the process. I think some of them are still up in the gallery, and they are participating in Camp Joshua, and they're learning from all of us here how this process works. I'd like to welcome you.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Further courtesies? The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2481, relating to transfers of real property interests and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2481A. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2481A addresses a troubling development in real property law that allows for private parties to impose real estate transfer fees on the sale of a home through a deed restriction. These private transfer fees are similar to a real estate transfer tax, except it is a private party who collects the fee upon every single sale of a particular home rather than a government entity. Very often, these private transfer fees are administered by a third party who has never had an ownership interest in the home. However, the third party does take a significant percentage of the proceeds for this charge, for this service. Private transfer fees present a number of obstacles for Oregonians who are trying to purchase a home. First, the imposition of a fee based on the sale price of a home adversely impacts the affordability of homes in Oregon. This increase in home prices is especially harmful to first-time home buyers. Second, private transfer fees place a substantial barrier to potential buyers in seeking financing, as the fee is often placed in the form of a deed restriction, which very likely could lead to a subsequent lien. With ever-tightening lending standards, the presence of a potential private transfer lien will make financing more difficult to obtain. Third, private transfer fees are a nightmare for potential purchasers seeking to obtain clear title. House Bill 2481A proactively protects Oregon consumers by clearly prohibiting the imposition of private transfer fees. The bill contains significant exceptions in order to ensure that legitimate programs that capture equity, such as manufactured housing, nonprofit co-ops, community land trusts, and other affordable housing programs, are not inadvertently impacted. Colleagues, House Bill 2481A passed unanimously out of your Consumer Protection Committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill. Colleagues, I want to thank the representative from Wilsonville for his explanation of this bill and for carrying this bill on the floor. This is a really good bill that looks at a very important issue. As private transfer fees have become more prevalent in the states of Texas and California, there has been a great deal of discussion in the legal community about the legality and enforceability of these transfer fees. House Bill 2481A clearly and definitively answers that question by prohibiting them in the state of Oregon. At its most basic elements, a private transfer fee allows a third party to collect a fee upon every purchase of a home, calculated as a percentage of the sale price far into the future. Often these fees are in effect for every sale of a home for 99 years. This bill will put Oregon at the forefront of consumer protection in home purchases by sending a message that questionable fees and exorbitant service charges will not be tolerated in our state. Colleagues, during the interim, I was involved in a great deal of discussion about the potential pitfalls that private transfer fees present and it was a pleasure to work with the Oregon Realtors Association in bringing this bill forward. I really commend the Realtors Association for their forward thinking on this issue and putting Oregon out in front of protecting titles and of our property and protecting consumers. Colleagues, this bill ensures that home purchases will not be hindered by undisclosed fees or liens, which have a detrimental impact on obtaining financing and clear title. I want to point out there is a floor letter from the Oregon Association of Realtors on your desk in support for House Bill 2481, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Winger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2481A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2521, relating to electronic signaling devices.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2521A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2521 would require an owner or operator of a commercial or industrial facility to post emergency response numbers for after business hours for facilities that have emergency position indicator radio beacon devices, which are primarily found on aircraft and watercraft. The problem is that the Civil Air Patrol gets a false alarm. They show up to an aircraft hangar and have no way of entering the aircraft hangar, and the signal is sent to a national facility, and it requires a national response as well as a local response. And by posting the phone number, it might alleviate some expenses to Civil Air Patrol as well as to the owners and operators of these commercial facilities. I urge your support, and let's move this to the Senate.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2521A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2599, related to hostile educational environments and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2599A. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't suppose this is one of those bills that I could just say it's a good bill, vote with me, the way I'm feeling today. I'll try to get through this. House Bill 2599, bullying and harassment are far too common in our schools. Bullying and harassment leave deep scars to Oregon's youth. This is a serious problem, and I think HB 2599 is part of the solution. HB 2599 is not breaking new ground. It is not breaking new ground. I'm going to address that up front before I get asked a question, why are we doing this? While Oregon has an anti-bullying law on the books, it fails to notify school community about the policy, designate a point person for complaints. It establishes systems for handling bullying complaints, and it allows for tracking complaints. Now, let me read the text of the bill here. HB 2599 amends definition of harassment, intimidation, or bullying in ORS 339.351 to include any act that interferes with the psychological well-being, I will come back to that, of a student, and any act that may be based on the protected class status of a person. Defines protected class, I will come back to that one also, as a group of persons distinguished or perceived to be distinguished by race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, national origin, marital status, or family status, source of income or disability. Places new content requirements on school district policies related to harassment, intimidation, and bullying. Requires districts to include the following additional items in harassment, intimidation, and bullying policies. The definition of protected class, statement of the scope of the policy, reporting and investigation procedures related to harassment, intimidation, and bullying, and procedures for a person to request that a district review the actions a school took in responding to harassment, intimidation, or a bullying report. Requires districts at a minimum to make their harassment, intimidation, and bullying policies annually available to parents, guardians, school employees, and students. Provides that a district that fails to supplement its policy is considered non-standard under ORS 327.103. Encourages school districts to incorporate into existing training programs for students and school employees information related to the prevention of and appropriate response to acts of harassment, intimidation, and bullying. Provides that the provisions related to the new definitions and policy requirements shall first apply to the 09-10 school year. Declares an emergency. Now, if I can find my notes here, requires psychological well-being. I have that somewhere. Psychological well-being. The term, and Kevin was going to help me here. Can you find the psychological well-being? Medication is such a wonderful thing, isn't it? Psychological well-being, as used in HB 2599, is not a defined legal term. The term is not defined in the bill, nor is it used in any other Oregon statute. When the term is used in case law, psychological well-being of a person tends to be a factor when considering the appropriateness of a person's surrounding, such as a custody proceeding in a hostile workplace environment, for example, and is not given a definitive definition or parameters, and that's out of legislative counsel. And to protected class, can you find my notes on that? There's one point I wanted to make on the protected class. We didn't have this language in the original bill, but we did add, but not limited to. And also in the beginning of line 20 on page 1 under section D, may be based on. It doesn't say shall be based on. Colleagues, basically what we're trying to do here, so I don't bore you too much, and I do want to do justice to this bill, I apologize. What we're trying to do is stiffen up the language that school districts already have in law. We just want to make sure that all of our children are protected from harassment, and bullying. It's as simple as that. And there are some good programs out there that some school districts throughout the state are implementing. And kids in those school districts, as we heard in a testimony, are safer and the programs are working. We just want to encourage all school districts to implement their programs because bullying is a serious problem. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, how dare I stand up here and speak against a bill on bullying? I have children, and they've all, every one of them, have been involved as victims of another kid's bullying. And hearing the stories that came before us in the committee, it broke my heart to hear some of these stories. They were very, very compelling. So to be clear, I want to make sure our schools have the tools to combat bullying. But this legislation, as the carrier of the bill said, has a vague term that I think could be potentially very difficult and have unintended consequences. He talked about psychological well-being in his carrying of the bill, and mentioned that there is no definition in the bill, nor is there a legal definition of the bill. We asked for a definition of psychological well-being, and no one could give us one. And some try to assert that psychological well-being is comparable to, say, a hostile work environment. But, there are no court cases tying the two terms, and I would argue it's a real stretch to compare kids on a playground to an adult in the workplace worried about losing their job. One more thing that makes me uncomfortable with this bill is that something that one of my school superintendents mentioned to me in my district the other night. He's worried about false allegations that kids may make against a teacher or a coach or somebody at the school that perhaps that child is mad at, saying that, hey, Mr. Jones hurt my feelings. Kind of wide open. Who's going to sort out all these complaints? Bottom line is, I'm going to be voting no, hopefully to send a message to the Senate that this issue needs to be looked at, and hopefully they can address this over there, and I'll come back, and I will support it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, thank you for your consideration of House Bill 2599. Unfortunately, today, too many Oregon students are afraid when they go to school. The most recent Healthy Teen survey showed that within the last month of the time that survey was taken, 41% of eighth graders had experienced bullying. This is not acceptable, and we need to do a better job in our schools. One of the problems is that if a student is being bullied, if they're being harassed, they may not know who they can trust, who they can talk to, who can help them resolve the problem. And that is the core thing that this bill does. It will designate in every single school district across the state that key point person that a child or a family can count on to know that they will take this seriously and that they will know how to respond. And this is important not just for the child that is being bullied, but also for the individual who is doing the bullying, who may have issues of their own that need to be addressed. By knowing who is responsible for this issue in each school district, we are going to be able to provide new and better protections and responses to these students. I wanted to address two issues that were raised. The first is the idea of protected class. We included so many words in that definition of protected class that every single one of us is, in fact, a member of a protected class, depending on the circumstance that you might find yourself in. We had a discussion in the committee in which one member talked about this individual was Caucasian and talked about being a racial minority in the school that this member had attended. And in that case, this would apply to them as well. If they were bullied on the basis of their race, the protected class doesn't talk about which race. It says race-based harassment, which can be anyone of any race. The bill is very clear. The intention is very clear. It is not acceptable to bully or harass anyone. Secondly, this issue of psychological well-being is very important. We all know what happens at schools. This is not an issue of calling someone a name, and all of a sudden this is bullying. What we are talking about is behavior that has escalated to the point that the victim or the recipient of this harassment or bullying is so afraid that they are working in a hostile work environment. And in a memo that was provided to the committee, we had some excerpts from a variety of employment law cases, and I'll just read a piece of it. House Bill 2599 further clarifies hostile educational environment with the term psychological well-being. These terms are considered legal terms of art that were taken right out of hostile work environment cases under Title VII and put into the Model Safe Schools legislation in several other states. Because of that, there are existing cases where the standard has been made clear and demonstrates that the term is not vague. There should be no concern that this will open up districts to frivolous claims. Also, because it comes from employment law originally, the standard is much higher than you would think at first glance, and the memo goes on to cite a number of cases. You have to be able to demonstrate that this psychological damage is due to this harassment. The bottom line important message of this bill is that if you are a student and you are being bullied or harassed, first of all, you don't have to take it. Second of all, you need to know who it is that you can go to talk to have the situation resolved. That is what this does. Finally, the committee was very concerned about this issue. We were concerned about how to put teeth into the enforcement mechanism of this, and we wanted to make sure that we're looking at what a comprehensive bullying prevention program would look like in schools. This has been added to the work plan for the Education Committee. We will continue working on this in the interim, and that sends a message to local school districts that we are very serious about the need to adopt these policies and to have this point person ready. In the end, colleagues, every single Oregon student deserves to be safe at school. The stories that we've heard from all over the state are heartbreaking and devastating. Please join me in sending a message of hope to these students in every single district by saying, we're going to make sure you have a person you can trust to talk to, and bullying is not acceptable in Oregon schools. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill is about one thing, and it's rather simple. It's about inappropriate behavior. And in some of our discussion, in a lot of our discussion in committee and our discussion here today, it's about a few different things. It's about inappropriate behavior, not about why a person is bullied. I guarantee you, if my son comes home from school next week and he's been bullied, my first question is not, why? My first question, and I would venture to say the majority of people would agree with me, is going to be who? And that's where the emphasis of this bill belongs. It belongs on the behavior. There was quite a bit of discussion in committee about protected class. I want to make my position very clear. Bullying or harassment of any type is unacceptable, period. And again, I think the majority of us would agree on that, and certainly the ones I've heard. And when we send our kids to school, we send them to school to learn and to be safe. And again, it's not about who they are. We don't want to send the wrong message here. The message is about the behavior. When I was a deputy sheriff a few years ago and I would work the road and I would arrest people and I'd put them in jail, it was based on one thing, their behavior. This bill, again, is about behavior. I will be supporting this bill, and I hope in doing a good thing and addressing a very important issue that we haven't muddied the water. It's very simple. It's about who did it. It's not about why. So we need to remember that. I will be supporting this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I share a lot of the concerns that have been expressed. When the advocates came to me and said, would you support this bill? I said yes, because I think bullying is a serious issue in our schools, and I think we do need to address it. But when I saw the actual words to this, I was a little disturbed that about language around protective class and psychological well-being. What I'm trying to put on record here is that I want more hearings and more discussion, particularly around this undefined psychological well-being. I see an opportunity for endless lawsuits, endless contention. When we write laws, we need to be very careful in our language, and I am very discomforted by this bill. I think that much has been made on the floor. I think that all of us know that bullying is an option, and we want to deal with it. But the language of this bill should give us pause. It's pretty wide open when you don't have a definition of psychological well-being that's going to work in courts in a really cogent way. So I ask that all of us talk to our colleagues, and if I presume it's going to go forward, but it has serious issues in its language. I have heard from constituents, why is protected class in there at all? It's about students. And it's about all students, and they're being bullied. So think carefully about this. I do not like the language in this law. Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Having been responsible for 500 children for many, many years, this is a very serious issue, and even though the children were 3 to 5 years old, you still had to address the behavior of children and how they treated one another and how we taught children to respect one another. I understand the concerns about protected class, but I can tell you that if we don't identify certain groups of people, it will still go on. And being one of those members of the protected class, not by my sex, but by my disability, I too know what it's like to be bullied and picked on. And obviously, I didn't think that this would bother me, but it does. It affects you when it happens, and it affects you for a very long time after it's happened. And I think that because in my program, we really focused on the well-being of children, I think this is a wake-up call to schools to do the same, because sometimes we tend to minimize children's behavior and not consider it as seriously as we ought to. And I can tell you that when a child is psychologically distressed, if you're on the ball, you can pick it up. And I have done that as a director, walking into a classroom and identifying children and asking the teacher what was going on with this child. It can happen. And this is one bill that I really believe that if we believe in the welfare of children in our public schools, that we should be passing.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we've had bullying ever since there's been more than two children in the world. We've never condoned it, but it's always been there. We've had it on this floor. You think about it, folks. We've had it on this floor. But we need to use some common sense here as well. That common sense is, what are the educators doing to combat this? Why does the state have to come in and tell the schools what they need to be doing locally? Doesn't common sense tell you that you would stop that in the first place? Does this bill mean that we're going to have to hire someone to monitor bullying in every school? There are some ramifications here, and what we need to ask is the what if question, what now question. I think it's a local control issue. I think that's why you have elected officials on your school board, and they in turn tell your administrator or superintendent what policies will be set. I don't think the state needs to come in and tell you bullying is bad. I would hope that your local officials would have sense enough to know that. Thank you, colleagues.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, in my district, and I can't be that much different than anybody else, I'm sure that you've had phone calls from parents saying, I've contacted my school board, I've contacted the administrators, I couldn't get anything done, I had to pull 7-year-old Nellie out of school, and now I'm homeschooling Nellie, which I don't have time to do, but I'm doing it until I can find a private school where I can feel that Nellie's safer. For whatever reason, some school districts, some school boards are ignoring the issue. And maybe sometimes they need a little direction from Big Daddy in Salem. Maybe this is one of those times. Please join me in voting yay for this.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2599A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 4, in memoriam, Hank Collins, 1951 to 2008.
The question now rises upon final reading and passage of SCR 4. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this resolution is good for my psychological well-being. It honors the life of Hank Collins, a man who I was fortunate enough to meet through his work as county health administrator in Jackson County. Hank passed away last year. We were in session when he passed away, and we were not able to get a resolution done to honor his life during that February session, and I'm very grateful for the chance to bring this resolution toward you today. Hank came to Southern Oregon from his native Tennessee in 1987 to take on the position of public health director in Jackson County. He eventually rose to lead the entire Jackson County Health and Human Services Department. He gained a good deal of attention with his efforts to curtail wood stove smoke, which was a tremendous health hazard with Jackson County's immersion layer. His success on that front continues to have measurable effects for air quality for Jackson County residents to this day. But it's his work in human services, colleagues, that had an even greater impact. Under his guidance, the department strove to provide the best services available, even in the face of budget cuts and political pushback. Hank's professional accomplishments have improved countless lives over the years and range from a groundbreaking and effective needle exchange program to drug courts to family planning services to programs for persistent and severe mental illness. He was absolutely tireless in his efforts to help any and all in our community who are in need. But I would be remiss to memorialize Hank for only his work. As superb as an administrator as he was, he deserves to be remembered as more. As a splendid person, he will always remain in the hearts of those who knew him. On more than one occasion, I had people tell me that Hank reached into his own wallet to pull out money to buy medication for somebody who showed up in his office in a crisis. He was beloved by the people he served and by his colleagues as well. The director of the United Way of Jackson County said this after his passing. Hank was loud, argumentative, and funny, and charming, and deeply committed to creating opportunities to help people improve their lives. That's the Hank who brought joy to the lives of many, and that's the Hank I'd like to remember. When Hank passed away last year, he left behind a loving family that includes his wife of 26 years, Cindy, his mother, and his two sisters and colleagues. Hank's family decided late last year to develop an organization they call Hank's Bank, which is basically a fairly loosely structured organization. It's a nonprofit that the head of United Way and Hank's family helped start, where basically you contribute money, and if somebody's in need, they go to Hank's Bank. And in the kind of memorizing Hank, they reach into Hank's wallet, and they give some money to somebody who's in crisis and helps them out. Please join me in honoring their husband, son, and brother by by voting to adopt Senate Concurrent Resolution 4 today in honor of a great Oregonian, Hank Collins. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, my fellow colleague from Ashland has tapped upon an individual that was very special. If you ever saw the movie Pay It Forward, that was about Hank Collins. He was well respected. He worked diligently to help people help themselves. That was the most important thing. He looked out for his fellow man, and he truly believed that humans needed a helping hand up, not just to give them something. I first met him 14 years ago in the West Medford Community Coalition. He was quite an advocate for West Medford, which is the economically depressed part of our community, and he continued on that basis until it dissolved. Hank was a very special person that earned your respect. I think that the only thing that we could possibly say about Hank that hasn't been said is that not only did he earn that, but he demanded it.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the resolution.
I worked with Hank Collins for 3 years on the Jefferson State Behavioral Board of Directors. Much of what I learned in that period about mental health, I learned from Hank Collins. His achievements need to be recognized, and SCR 4 does that. Please vote yes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. SCR 4, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 41 relating to Education Services District. Senate Bill 239 related to notices required for foreclosures of trustees and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 277 related to access to toilet facilities. Senate Bill 391 related to exotic animals. Senate Bill 438 related to regulation of credit unions declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 596 relating to decumbrominated diphenyl ether.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 394 relating to property tax roll and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 394A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this Senate bill comes to you with unanimous support on the Senate floor. It basically cleans up statutes which apply to tax collections and what's the minimum refund and what's the minimum to have to issue in collections. There are statutes that are sort of at different amounts. This cleans them all up to and settles on the $10 amount. It works both ways in terms of the tax collector, basically the counties, and this has to do with property taxes, has a $10 minimum that they collect, and below that they don't collect from the taxpayers, and a $10 minimum that they have to send out. So it works both ways. It conforms statutes. This comes to you from your Revenue Committee. I will tell you that I will accept questions on the specifics of it. It confirms my feeling that this should not have gone on the consent calendar despite its unanimous approval. Because since I've been sitting here, I have had a number of people come to me and ask me questions, which confirms my opinion that revenue bills should not really be on the consent calendar, no matter what. So thank you for confirming that for me, and I'm getting laughter from the chair, and I am happy to answer any questions on this bill.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Speaker, for this opportunity to speak about my issue on consent calendars.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 394A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 395, relating to personal property tax delinquency warrants and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 395. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a pretty simple bill. What it does is it allows the tax collectors, or the when they have a overdue bill that needs to be collected, the current legislation is that they must post in four consecutive days in a newspaper that's widely read a notice. This bill would allow them to reduce that to one day of notice in a paper and send out a first-class mail. As you all know, if you put any ads in the paper, that they're getting more and more expensive. The other thing this does is allow them to recoup a bit more of their costs and charge $20 fee instead of $15 fee. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Senate Bill 395, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan, you made it into the queue first.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Democratic colleagues, please join me immediately in the caucus room. You may go to the lounge, but do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Do not drop your stuff off in your office. See you there.
Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Last call for remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, March 26, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, March 26, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.